From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Iran's Revolutionary Guards have been deployed to at least three provinces following nearly a week of anti-government protest. The head of the guards proclaimed the end of what he called the sedition. But there are reports protests continued late Wednesday. Dozens, including Firoz Molavi of the National Council of Resistance of Iran, demonstrated Wednesday in Brussels.
The young generation, the people of Iran, the women, they've had enough of this Islamic fundamentalist regime, and they want this regime to go.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an end to violence, urging respect for the right of peaceful assembly and freedom of expression. The UN Human Rights Chief called on Tehran to rein in its security forces. His spokesperson is Elizabeth Russell.
I think for us it's important that the Iranian authorities respect the rights of the people who have been demonstrating, the people who have been detained, and that includes guaranteeing their right to life.
In a Wednesday tweet, President Donald Trump spoke of his respect for the Iranian people as they try to take back, in his words, their corrupt government. He promised great support from the U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, in a VOA interview, said the U.S. backs the protesters and their aspirations.
I can assure you, the United States and the wider world stands with the people of Iran who want a better, more prosperous, and freer future.
A senior Trump administration official told Reuters the U.S. is considering sanctioning those involved in putting down the protests. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn Wednesday announced plans to drop charges against political prisoners and close a prison camp to, in his words, widen the democratic space and foster national reconciliation. The move came 2 months after deadly anti-government demonstrations, mostly in the Oromia and Amhara regions, leading to a state of emergency. This is VOA News. The White House Wednesday defended President Trump's tweet late Tuesday that the U.S. has a bigger, more powerful nuclear button than does North Korea. In a VOA interview, Vice President Mike Pence said global sanctions over the North's nuclear and missile programs are having an effect, and he hoped for a peaceful resolution to tensions.
If North Korea will abandon their nuclear and ballistic missile ambitions, if they will dismantle those programs, there's an opportunity for a peaceable solution.
North Korea Wednesday reopened a communications link with South Korea after Seoul proposed high-level talks. President Trump's administration reportedly has notified members of Congress it will soon announce plans to cut security assistance to Pakistan. Reuters quotes congressional aides a day after Pakistan expressed disappointment over a New Year's Day tweet by Mr. Trump is not doing enough to go after terrorists using the country as a safe haven for operations in Afghanistan. The aide said that announcement could come Thursday. European Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini said her trip to Cuba this week was aimed at strengthening ties with Havana, even as recently reestablished ties with Washington remained tense. The EU and Cuba signed a political dialogue and cooperation agreement last year. Mogherini, speaking to students, rejected the U.S. trade embargo of Cuba and criticized recent U.S. travel and investment restrictions. French President Emmanuel Macron Wednesday announced he would overhaul French media legislation to fight the spread of what he called fake news on social media. Mr. Macron said his aim is to protect democratic life from what he called fake news. He especially criticized Russian media accusing RT of sowing disinformation about him on its website and social media platform during last year's election. A day after a truck-bus collision on a highway in western Peru, emergency workers were able to extricate the last of more than 50 bodies of people killed when the bus careened off a highway and down a steep 80-meter cliff. The bus came to a rest on a rocky, isolated beach with no access by road, making recovery efforts difficult. The U.S.-based ocean floor exploring company Ocean Infinity says it is moving a vessel to a possible search area where a Malaysian airliner may have crashed nearly 4 years ago as it seeks to finalize a contract with the Malaysian government. The disappearance of the Boeing 777 flight MH370 after takeoff from Kuala Lumpur, March 2014, with 239 on board, remains one of the world's great aviation mysteries. A medical journal said death rates for patients undergoing surgery in Africa are double the global average. The Lancet cited few medical specialists in the continent, poor hospital conditions, and a lack of post-operative care as the main reasons. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Sirleaf extends legislative session to facilitate transition to President-elect George Weah's administration.
In this transition, the national legislature plays a very key role. So the extension of the term of this particular legislature is in the interest of enhancing the transitional process.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Minister of Information. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa is urged to institute reforms to ensure free and fair election this year. An analyst says Kenyan security forces must do more to protect against cross-border attacks by Al-Shabaab. And an Ethiopian opposition leader says the government must do more to facilitate national reconciliation.
I don't think religion consciousness is the only issue that would bring about reconciliation in this country. There are several other serious factors that need to be addressed.
Professor Beheni Petros is vice chair of the Ethiopian Federal Democratic Forum. Death rates after surgery are twice as high in African hospitals, and a toy company specifically for African children. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has extended the 53rd session of the National Legislature by 9 days, beginning today, January 4th, to facilitate the transition to President-elect George Weah's administration. Weah, elected by a landslide in the country's December 26th runoff election, is expected to be inaugurated on January 22nd this year. A proclamation issued Wednesday said there are several unresolved key matters of national interest that require the urgent attention of the 53rd legislature. Minister of Information Eugene Nambuye says the national legislature has a key role in this transition, the first in decades.
The proclamation by Madam President is in keeping with our organic law, which is the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia. Article 32B grants the President the authority to extend the session of the national legislature based on circumstances that would dictate her to do that. Because as you know very well, that since over 73, 74 years ago, we have not had such an incident where a constitutionally elected president will hand over power to another constitutionally elected president. In this transition, the national legislature plays a very key role. So the extension of the term of this 53rd legislature is in the interest of enhancing the transitional process.
So how is the transition itself going?
Well, the President of the Republic and the President-elect co-chaired the first meeting of the Joint Presidential Transitional Committee, which was attended by 15 members from the government and 15 members from the President-elect's team. And the meeting was very fruitful. We discussed the key issues about the transition. We discussed the economy. We discussed security matters. We discussed the mechanisms for handover, the protocol. And this takeover of power that will be done on the 22nd of January is moving in a harmonious way.
So when the proclamation talks about unresolved key matters of national interest, what is the president talking about?
Well, let me just say there are matters relating to the handover of power. And there are certain issues that require the participation of the 53rd legislature in the transitional process. So the extension by Madam President for 9 days is set to facilitate the transitional process to incorporate the national legislature in areas where they will be required to support this process. All her efforts now are geared towards ensuring that we have a peaceful, a smooth, and a harmonious transfer of power from her government to the government of President-elect Weah.
Mr. Nambuye, let me ask you, I know you said that a peaceful transfer of power has not happened in Liberia for many, many years. So in a process like this, does the outgoing president, like President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, does she contribute to or make suggestions to the incoming president in terms of cabinet decisions?
Absolutely not. The president is not going to determine how the president-elect forms his government. And, you know, she is merely and greatly focused on how she can hand over power in keeping with the constitutional framework and in keeping with the laws of Liberia. You know, what we are doing as a government, even prior to the election itself, we have been preparing to produce handover notes, you know, as a government, and turn over notes to the incoming government to appeal the data to them and the statistics so that they can use that as a basis for making decisions as they take over the governance of our country.
You see, I asked that question because there's already in the local Liberian media that the president has a wish list that she has given to President-elect George Weah in terms of who she wants in certain cabinet positions.
The reports that you have seen in the local media is not true. Madam President has not, and I repeat, and will not make such suggestions to President-elect Weah. The government will be chosen by the incoming president when he takes over on the 22nd of May, in keeping with our constitution. President Weah will then decide who his team will be. You know, Madam President will not interfere in that, and she has not.
Mr. Nabwe, it's so nice to speak with you, and let me say Happy New Year to you again.
Thank you for the opportunity granted.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Zimbabwe Election Resource Center, a nonpartisan think tank and advocacy institution on elections and democracy, has written a letter to President Emmerson Mnangagwa, urging him to introduce a number of reforms to ensure free and fair election this year. The group has also petitioned Parliament and the Justice Ministry. President Mnangagwa has promised to build a new democracy, including holding free, fair, and credible elections this year. But Zimbabwe Election Resource Center Director Tawanda Chimene says the president must walk the talk by ensuring that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is independent. Zimbabwe Justice Minister Ziyami Ziyami tells reporter Blessing Zulu of Viewers Studio 7 Zimbabwe program that the country's electoral laws are in compliance with African Union and Southern African Development Community guidelines.
In our concede that Viewers Zimbabwe is within the SADC and AU guidelines. We've looked at our laws, we've looked at the SADC guidelines. Everything that they are complaining about is clearly covered within our constitution and our laws. Our constitution clearly stipulates that ZEC is an independent body, not subject to the control of anyone, and that is in compliance with the SADC and AU guidelines. And it clearly lays out the work of ZEC, and our electoral laws, they are compliant with everything that is there. So insofar as we are concerned, we believe that we should not just waste resources doing cosmetic changes to the legislation that are already materially covered by the existing legislation.
There was also concern that ZEC was not independent because it was not controlling its budget. Has this been rectified?
That is not true, Blessing. You may recall that last year I was the Portfolio Committee Chair of the Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. We raised this when we noticed that the budget for ZEC was under the Minister of Justice, and we pointed that to Honorable Chinamasa that that was an anomaly, and he agreed. And last year, ZEC was receiving their appropriation directly from Minister of Finance, and that is the same thing this year. In fact, the Minister, Honorable Chinamasa, has already set aside within the current budget an amount for elections, an amount of which, if any players feel it's not adequate, they are free to go to the Portfolio Committee of Justice to raise their concerns, to raise the argument, so that as we debate the budget, parliamentarians will then debate on behalf of the various stakeholders to say that for ZEC to adequately carry out its mandate, can we ensure that a budget of so much is included, and then Parliament passes that budget.
Lastly, Honorable Ziyambi, there is a concern about the right to vote with some of the electoral monitoring bodies arguing that prisoners and Zimbabweans in the diaspora have the right to vote. What's your take on that?
Yes, thank you very much. Like I said earlier, we had an Indaba in Bulawayo where we deliberate on most of these electoral issues. And the conclusion then, which was not challenged by most of these civic society organizations which were present when the legal experts who were making presentations did their presentations, was that we have a legal framework that adequately covers most of these areas, and there was no need for us to go that route. However, let me say that at this juncture, we cannot go to those specific issues regarding the diaspora vote, the right of the prisoners, because after that Indaba, they decided to take the issues to court. So we await the determination of the court, and the court, I understand, is sitting on the 8th of January. Once that determination has been given, we then know the direction to proceed.
That's Zimbabwe's Justice Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi speaking with the reporter Blessing Zulu of Viewers Studio 7 Zimbabwe program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, January 4th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. An Ethiopian opposition leader says Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn needs to do more to bring about national reconciliation in the country. This comes after the Prime Minister announced Wednesday that he will release political prisoners to facilitate national reconciliation. Several opposition members have been in jail after they were arrested and charged with involvement in terrorism and secession of the Oromia province. Professor Beyeni Petros, vice chair of the Ethiopian Federal Democratic Forum, known as MEDREC, says the opposition has always maintained that the arrests were politically motivated. He says if the government wants genuine reconciliation, it must first address the issue of democratization, rule of law, human rights abuses, corruption, and bad governance. Petros said the Ethiopian government is cracking due to the pressure from Ethiopians and the international community.
First reaction would be, I hope this is addressing our continued demand for the release of all political prisoners. However, a statement made by the Prime Minister and his colleagues that are leaders of the four component parties of the ruling coalition made it so vague in a way that this is going to be a procedure by clearing each individual prisoner on the basis of the constitutional and legal proceedings pertaining to each individual. So we really don't know what this means and how fast they would be acting on this and which political prisoners would be, you know, benefiting from this statement. And we are yet to see how far they would go to make good on their statement.
The Prime Minister said that this announcement is intended to bring about reconciliation. First of all, do you in the opposition believe that your friends should have been arrested in the first place?
No, we have been holding all along. All these imprisonments are politically motivated and they are illegal. And hence, they have not been able to present cases against them. And they are simply, you know, wasting time by continuously giving appointments in the courts after every month or so. And I don't think releasing political prisoners is the only issue that would bring about reconciliation in this country. There are several other serious factors that need to be addressed.
Okay, if it's not releasing, what do you think can bring about genuine reconciliation?
Basically, addressing the fundamental question of democratization in this country, which they have blocked all along and have been ruling this country single-handedly. 100% ruling party parliament in this country does not, you know, indicate that there is a democracy in this country. There are also other issues like over the years there have been so many abuses in the population. People have been killed with impunity and no serious charges have been issued over any of these perpetrators. There is a question of corruption, question of bad governance, and the lack of rule of law and abuse of human rights. All of these can be issues that need to be addressed before reconciliation can be thought of in this country.
As you said, these opposition leaders have been in jail since last year. What do you think the Prime Minister decided to make this announcement?
Is the pressure put on them by the population, by the Ethiopians, all over the country? There have been, you know, demonstrations calling for the resignation of this government and, you know, calling for free, fair, and genuine elections to determine who should be leading this country.
Professor Bayeni Petros is vice chair of the Ethiopian Federal Democratic Forum. He was speaking with me from the capital, Addis Ababa. An analyst says Kenyan security forces must do more to protect against cross-border attacks by the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. This comes after Al-Shabaab militants late Tuesday killed five Kenyan policemen near the border with Somalia, one of such Al-Shabaab attacks in recent months. Somali political analyst Faisal Roble says although Al-Shabaab is a regional terrorist group, Kenya, as a sovereign state with its own police and army, must do more to protect and preserve the security of Kenya.
Well, it's again the same story that Al-Shabaab is a hit-and-run guerrilla group that only uses religion, but it utilizes all the tactics that we know in the warfare that pertains to a guerrilla movement. So they are both inside Kenya and inside Somalia, and any chance that they get to attack Kenyan soldiers, they will do so. And this is one of those incidents where the Kenyan patrols were in the eastern portion of Somalia, of Kenya, where Somalis live, and they got the chance to ambush and kill five of them in the county called Mandera.
These are Kenyan police, and they were not on Somali soil. They're on Kenyan soil. Whose responsibility is that in terms of guaranteeing the security of the police?
Yes, it's the Kenyan responsibility because Kenya is a separate country that has its own borders. It has its own regional police that polices near the borders. It has also a Kenyan army, which is supposed to protect the nation. So it's, by all accounts, the sole responsibility of the Kenyan government to protect and preserve the security of the Kenyan nation.
But can it be said that it's both the responsibility of the Somali security forces and the Kenyan security forces, because the Al-Shabaab came from the Somali side of the border?
Actually, if you study Al-Shabaab, you know, it's now a regional terrorist group that has a foothold in the entire Horn of Africa, including Kenya and parts of the Islamic regions of Tanzania, although they are not as active. But because of the fact that Kenya and Somalia share a significant border and Somalis live on both sides, Kenya should never entertain the dream that says Al-Shabaab only resides in Somalia. The Kenyan government is very well aware of the fact that Al-Shabaab has bases, not as strong as the ones that they have in Somalia, but they have their own network inside Kenya, both in the cities as well as in the border towns. So, yeah, the origin may have been in Somalia, but this is a regional terrorist group that defies colonial boundaries.
Why would Al-Shabaab find the need to attack inside Kenya instead of inside Somalia?
So I think that's a very complex question. I think if you go by what Al-Shabaab says, they call for two issues. The number one issue that they demand from Kenya is for Kenyan troops to completely out of Somalia. That's number one. And number two, to stop the Kenyan effort to claim to have started building a wall to separate the Somali side from the Kenyan side. Although the people who live are the same people, ethnically, clan-wise, cultural, religious. So I think those demands fuel Al-Shabaab's anger against Kenya at this particular time.
Faisal Roble is a leading Somali political analyst. He was speaking with me from Los Angeles, California. Patients in African hospitals are twice as likely to die after surgery than on the global average, according to a new study. VST Baragona reports.
About 1% of surgery patients in Africa die of complications. That's compared to 0.5% on average worldwide.
It's really concerning when you see how high the mortality is in Africa, considering that, you know, the patients are generally fit and they're having a lot more minor surgeries.
University of Cape Town professor Bruce Picard and a group of colleagues gathered mortality data from 247 hospitals in 25 African countries, from Algeria to Madagascar. Their findings, published in the journal The Lancet, reveal a severe shortage of African surgeons, obstetricians, and anesthesiologists.
We're between 20 and 50 times lower than what we would consider a global minimum for providing having safe surgery.
Most of the patients who died did not do so on the operating table, but in the days following surgery, he adds.
We're actually failing to recognize patients who are having complications in the post-op period, and so a minor complication actually ends up becoming a major complication.
But Picard says that offers an opportunity for improvement.
We can develop a risk calculator that will tell us before surgery which patients we think are going to get into trouble.
His group is planning a study in 2019 to see if they can reduce patient deaths by focusing limited resources on patients at the highest risk. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
When Rocky Daffy Dube had her first child, she realized she could not find toys that told African stories for her son. So she decided to start her own company in Senegal to do just that. 3 years later, the company, Alifa, has expanded from Senegalese wrestler action figures into dolls and more. Daffy Dube tells Ricky Stryak the main goal is to move production, which is currently combined jointly operations in China, the U.S., and Senegal, fully into Africa.
My inspiration started right after I had my first child. So at that time, I saw that there wasn't enough material for him to learn about Africa. So I started painting his room with African animal characters from the story Le Clélière, It's a Tale, written by Abdoulaye Sadji and Léopold Sébastien. And I still didn't feel that it was enough for him to know about Africa. So I decided to move on to the company that will make toys specifically made for African children, but also for other children from other cultures so that they can know about Africa more. So we started making some action figures of Senegalese wrestlers at the time, and then we moved on to puzzles that were more educational. And then I felt the need that we had to make toys for girls because I have a lot of nieces. So we started making dolls. We are moving forward with other stuff that are coming up next year.
Where are you finding your customers are coming from? Are they coming from the diaspora, or are they, you're based in Senegal. So, you know, are they coming from Senegal?
So actually we're based in Senegal, but we also have something going on in the U.S., right? So our customers are from Africa, mainly from Senegal, because we have one of the companies here. So so Senegal, we have also some customers from France, we have customers from Canada, and also from the US.
Where are you making these dolls?
We're trying to do most of our production here, but as you said, we don't have some material here, like the dolls, you know, it's vinyl dolls, so we really don't have that material here. So I would say that it's a triangular trade. Between China, the U.S., and Senegal. So, but we're really trying to make a big effort by making things mostly here. Like, for example, the clothes, the braids, and also the packaging, we also try to make it here as much as possible.
And what do you have planned for this year? Are you planning on growing, or are you planning on getting new dolls or toys out?
Yeah, so for this year and future years, we're actually working on expanding the product line by doing a lot of prototyping right now. So we are also planning to bring our next generation of toys for this year. We really are working on really nice stuff that I will probably not share here, but, you know, it's a surprise, so it's going to come up soon. And at that stage, also, we're trying to meet our demands and also the euphoria for the dolls, principally. In the long run, we have the will to centralize all the production in Africa. So that would be probably in the next 5 years.
That was Rocky Daffy Dube, founder of Althea Toys. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn announced Wednesday the release of political prisoners and the closure of a notorious detention center in what he called an effort to widen the democratic space for all. And that's it for this Thursday, January 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butt in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clott, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. African Beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.